This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
When it comes to resilience, how else are we going to know how to bounce back and be strong in the face of difficulty without at first acknowledging how you feel?
Hello everyone. 大家好.
Selamat datang.
Konnichiwa.
Hola.
안녕하세요.
Assalamualaikum.
And kia ora.
Kia ora everyone, welcome back to Connecting Cultures Features, a show by, for and about the multicultural people of Dunedin in New Zealand. Today we have Garrett George from the Pacific Trust Otago here with us today. Aloha, kia ora George.
Aloha, nice to see you. It's all good.
I just called you your last name.
This is my common issue with my two first names, so don't worry one bit.
Is it because it's the double G's?
Yeah, GG. And my partner's name has KK, so we're GG and KK.
Aw. Yeah. While we're talking about your partner, well, she will definitely be an important person in the chat today.
Oh, yeah.
But I wonder if you can just introduce yourself first.
Oh, yeah. I've been lucky enough to be living in Dunedin for about 9 years now, but in my upbringing, I was born and raised on the Big Island of Hawaii and was able to work my way through primary, secondary, and study in the uni on Oahu child development and psychology, which kind of led me into teaching. And I did that for about a decade, almost a decade in Hawaii before meeting my amazing and lovely wife, Kailika. And she and I kind of just known each other for a short period of time before we moved to Japan, which we can talk about a little bit more as well. And we even got married there so I could stay in Japan due to visa issues if I hadn't. And was pretty much continuing working in education as a kindy or kindergarten teacher there for a couple of years before moving to New Zealand.
That's beautiful. I'm sure just from hearing everything you shared today, there's so much little things we can talk about. Mm. So I do want us to talk about life in Hawaii before anything else. So we do like to travel back with our guests and talk about who they are before they are who they are today. So yeah, what was life like over there?
Oh, it was a really lucky upbringing because, and I think it's why I love Dunedin so much, because it was a small little city in, out just outside of Hilo, Hawaii, on the Big Island, where it was pronounced Keaau. And I went to the same primary, secondary school where even my mother worked the whole time, so I couldn't get in trouble. And small city where everybody kind of knew everybody else, similar to Dunedin, everybody has some sort of connections to others quite easily because of its size and population number. And that's kind of why we settled down here as well. But the culture was quite mixed and beautifully spread across many different nations because it's kind of a melting pot from people across one side of the Pacific connecting to the other. And everyone from Asia all the way to North America, South America kind of comes there. And yeah, more often than not, they just come for a little bit, but generations are made and settle down over there. Yeah.
Can you tell me more about the place in general for someone who hasn't been there?
Gotcha. It's a lot hotter, I can tell you that. That's one thing. Funny enough, I don't miss too much because as soon as you step out, the humidity is about 100% most days. I was on the side of the island where the wind kind of was sweeping over from the ocean, so every day it could rain. I think the record for most rainfall was, oh gosh, it's in inches, but over a few hundred centimeters at least to just in a week.
So it rains a lot.
So much rain. But that means that everything is quite green and beautiful. And so it feels nice to have a summer here where it can be rainy at times. I find it to be pretty reminiscent, even though it is maybe seen as, this is tough weather, in the summertime, I don't mind it whatsoever. It reminds me of Hawaii a little bit, for sure.
And because it's a melting pot of different Pacific cultures, and also there's a lot of people who visit as well, what would you say is Hawaii culture that people, that is very distinguishable in your sense?
Oh, yeah. I can kind of really find that a tricky question because of it being a melting pot. It's hard to find consistency across one household to another. But we do tend to have an overarching sort of understanding that if you're from Hawaii, even if you're not Hawaiian, it's called kama'aina. So it's being part of the island and being someone who lives there. When it comes to my upbringing, I can really think about how there wasn't so much Pacifica qualities. My Pacifica side, I am part Native Hawaiian, Kanaka Maoli, but my grandfather, who was full Hawaiian, had passed before I was born. So a lot of that sort of culture and teaching was lost before I could ever meet him, and then just was on my mom's side. So she tried to impart as much as she could. But it wasn't until I came to New Zealand that I really connected with a lot of the Pacifica culture and groups. Even though I am sort of a neutral party, there's not too many Hawaiians out in Dunedin of all places. They always think I'm joking when I meet another Hawaiian out here.
And you have met.
Yeah, only a small handful, because they might just be traveling and visiting, but not too many are settled down that I can easily find.
But how do you feel when you do meet another Hawaii person here in Dunedin?
There's just a sort of understanding, and we can kind of look at each other and know, after finally getting past that one moment of, are you really from Hawaii? Why are you all the way over here? Know that we've experienced a lot of similar things. Even if it might have been on a different island, it's just a connection that is unspoken but beautiful at the same time.
And so there are lots of islands there. Can you tell me like a little number?
So I know of the main islands that are populated, which are Hawaii, my island, Oahu, which is the capital, or that's where the main city, Honolulu, is, where a lot of tourists go and travel to. A lot of people live on Maui, Kauai. There's Koho'olawe, which is a bit less populated, Niihau. I might be missing one more. But then, after all of those, there's a chain of islands that are just land that are actually still growing because of volcanic activity. And over 2030, this is a good question for a Hawaiian on the spot, but as having not talked about it for quite some time, it's like a test that I probably would fail now that I'm not there for so long.
Can you tell me about your family?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My mom and dad, they still live in the same home that I kind of grew up in. They separated when I was quite young, and I was lucky enough to still have a really good relationship with both of them. And they, funnily enough, lived only about a kilometer and a half apart from each other, just to make it easier to see me, which I'm very lucky to have had that experience. And luckily, both of them were co-parents, and it wasn't sort of a disconnected relationship, and they still remained friends on my behalf. And so it wasn't on any fault of their own for the reasons why I decided to kind of run away from Hawaii.
Yeah, we won't think of that.
No. It was my kind of need to want to see the world. When you're on a little rock for over two decades, it seems like monotony, and it's a little bit slower than it could be. And that's why I was lucky enough to meet my wife, Kelika. Before we got married, she was offered a full ride scholarship for a university in Japan. And she didn't think that I would say yes when she offered for me to come along with her, because we had just known each other for a matter of about 5 or 6 months. But I said yes, and we've been together ever since. So it's been 9 years now.
So your wife, you met in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
Oh, yes. I'm the only child when it comes to my biological parents. But once my mom remarried and my dad remarried, I had a half-sister on my dad's side, and she's wonderful. She's 10 years younger than me, and she's not Hawaiian, but I think she really emits the Hawaiian culture as well, just living there and growing up there herself, and really kind of lets everything, we say, hang loose, or just kind of really be calm, chill, allow for the waves kind of take you where they will. Yeah. And on my mom's side, I kind of was brought into a family of a brother and two other sisters. So I had pretty much three sisters and a brother that are still living in America. So they're happy with a bunch of young ones of their own now, except for my youngest sister. She hasn't had any children yet, but she's planning on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love the like metaphors of just wisdoms that you bring on when you talk about Hawaii, and especially, you know, when it relates to the ocean and waves. I do wonder if you can tell us around what life was like there, just, you know, in a daily life, what is it like, just for us to imagine?
Right. I think since most days were rainy, we kind of just had to make do. But on a nice day where you could maybe go out and enjoy the outdoors, everything is as lush and green as you can imagine on the good summer days in New Zealand. And it's some of the days can be a little bit cooler, so you can manage to not be suffering out and about. But even meeting up with friends is just like second nature. Going to the beach, being able to be involved in the community was something that you just passively did without even acknowledging it, just because it was really lucky. I can say that there is some components of colonization and individualism based on the fact that we were kind of brought into the American sort of culture as well, which I can admit I think I fell victim to quite heavily as well. But at the same time, you can't take the island out of the boy sort of thing, as that saying goes too.
But that's a pretty good reflection, just realizing that, you know, the culture itself is community, but you also have the national side of things with the Americans.
I know it's a hot button issue topic, and we in Hawaii didn't have sort of a tiriti to manage how we could go along and live alongside or with the bigger superpower of the United States. So when I came around, it was already well enveloped by the fact that everything has a pretty Western style for everything from teaching to food to culture at most points. So it wasn't until coming to Japan and seeing other cultures, or going to New Zealand and living here for long enough, to kind of really recognize that things can be quite different elsewhere. But I'm lucky to also have not experienced too much culture shock because of living in that melting pot. If you do go to Hawaii, which a lot of people tend to just say, hey, I've been there and it's just been amazing. I love everything about it and I'm probably going to visit again. They probably have seen one side of Hawaii, but I always recommend to them, you should go to my island and kind of experience how it's even slower and more beautiful and less busy, because Oahu, where a lot of people go to just visit Honolulu and Waikiki Beach, is so overpopulated to the point of it's about a million people, so I don't know how many times more that is than Auckland, but about 10 times smaller than Auckland at the same time.
It's
so
insane.
It's just really tightly packed people everywhere, tourists and people that live there. And
your island is?
Is a lot bigger, but a lot less populated. So it's lucky, I find, that I got to grow up on that particular island, on Hawaii Island, compared to the capital, which is well known for its tourism. Hawaii Island is still, I think, touristic, and it gets a lot of its economic growth from that side of things in tourism, but it's a little less it's less speedy. It's a lot smaller in terms of how many people are pushing their way through to get in the water, to get into places to eat, to go on hikes, to go up. It's a cool place to go and see Mauna Kea, which is the tallest mountain in the world, from sea level, if you actually measure it from the seafloor. I know there's Mount Everest, but a lot of pride is held in how the largest mountain is always in our backyard, and it's the only Pacific island that has snow on the mountain sometimes.
That's insane.
Which it was fun. Just a side note, one of my first jobs ever as youth, when I was just taking a break from uni, sometimes 18 or 19 years old, I went up and would clean the telescopes, that just do some janitorial work in the telescopes to get some pocket change while on break, and got to go and see snow for the first time in my life on my island before I ever came to, well, it snowed in Japan, it snows in Dunedin sometimes, but yeah, I wasn't too shocked by that either because of having that experience. It was cool, good, yeah.
What a cool job as well as a young person.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, wow. So now we've heard your story growing up in Hawaii, and the reasons why, you know, you do want to explore the world after living there for 20 years. Tell me about Japan and why you said you don't feel culture shocked.
Yeah. When I grew up, there was many of my peers a few generations in from their family moving over to Hawaii and living there from Japan originally. So getting to experience their culture, even if it was intermingled with the Hawaiian culture, was luckily enough something that I could always kind of base myself in when visiting other places across Japan. So I lived, I told myself I probably wouldn't live in a big city again, but I lived in the middle of Tokyo after finishing uni on Oahu, and lived there for a couple years with my wife. We even got married in Mitaka, which is the amazing city where Studio Ghibli is based.
Wow.
Yeah. So our wedding certificate looks silly because it has Poki, the spoke. It's kind of like a little tiny mascot for the city because the city has Studio Ghibli's museum there.
What a flex.
But it looks like a forged document because of it.
Did you need to like verify your documents?
Yeah. When we came to New Zealand, we had to get it translated and everything. But luckily enough, it was accepted. But we loved living there for not only the food, the culture, the people. They took us in so welcoming. At the same time, I think not culture shock had happened, but just some things here and there that I realized, oh, yeah, I'm no longer in my small city in Hawaii anymore. I tried to give hugs to people, and that is just a big no-no. I tried to just invite people that met me for the first time, and they're like, okay, wait, we just met. Let's just get to know each other a little bit better, which maybe is my Hawaiian upbringing, and it's so easygoing. But over time and living there for a couple of years, which I highly recommend to anyone if they can get that chance, Japan is a beautiful, amazing place that I was lucky enough to get a job and teach English in an immersion school for kindergartners from like 3 to 5. But it was private, so we even had a few 1 to 2 year olds that I would hold on my hip while doing lessons. It was good times, yeah.
So you've worked with young people since then. Would that have been your first job?
In Japan. So I worked in Hawaii out of university, like you said, with young people for a long time. Taking a step back and thinking about what I did right after I graduated, I immediately started working at a kindy, funny enough, there too, just as a support aid for the they did a bit of daycare. And I realized, oh, there's other people working alongside people with disabilities, youth with disabilities. So about 4 or 5 years straight, I found after that job I really wanted to do that, and worked in many different schools as a substitute, sort of one-to-one support person, helping those with autism, other disabilities that would hinder their speech or their movement physically. And being able to support them always was something that really kind of refilled my wairua, and it refilled my ability to kind of have meaning in life. So it was always a push for me that kept me going.
I'm glad you had that experience, because it must have showed you a path that you could take, and also ignited your passion for working with young people and
definitely
people with different needs. Coming back to Japan, though, I wonder if you can share with us anything that you miss about Japan. And I'm sure, you're thinking about going back there to visit. We should also mention the names of your cats and dog.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we love Japan so much, not only for the fact that it's kind of where we spent our first few years of marriage, my wife Kilika and I, but also because we were just always, I'd say, foodies when it comes to living in Japan. I can admit I would always go to a konbini or stop on my way somewhere so that I could just be amazed by the cuisine everywhere. We love rice so much in Hawaii as well, so it was just something that was second nature. I could continue to take part in that passion for any day of the week. We love rice so much that we have 3 pets, and we name them after rice dishes, or rice balls technically. So our dog is the oldest, and she's Mochi, which is, if you don't know, a sweet mashed rice kind of dessert. Or sometimes it's also savory, and it can be amazing. And then we have onigiri, which is a rice ball where they usually put some fish or other sorts of food in the middle and wrap it with some nori. And our youngest kitten is musubi, which is kind of a Hawaiian take, made by Japanese people, but you just put spam inside of a rice sushi, basically.
I forgot that we were talking about your pets.
Yeah, no. So Mochi, onigiri, and musubi, they keep us very happy at home, because we love working with youth. But we don't have any children of our own, so they're kind of our little ones that we take care of. Yeah.
And besides the food, what do you miss most about Japan?
I do have a lot of camaraderie with the people I worked with. And funny enough, I think the reason why we'll probably go back to Japan next is reunion with those that I had worked with. When we finished working, at the kindergarten, I was given gifts from each and every person. They're so giving and wonderfully connected to those that they care about. So I've been missing them. At the same time, I bet they all have all grown so much, because it's been about, like I said, over half a decade here in Dunedin, and they're probably all the young ones are probably all in the middle of primary, if not getting to secondary school already. Things fly by like that. Another thing that I can miss about living in Japan probably would be just the sights and the amazing kind of experiences that I had. We hiked Mount Fuji. I would commute 2 hours every day on the train to go to work, but it was fine because it was such a cool experience to – we don't have trains in Hawaii on my island, so it was just a chance for me to unwind and experience looking out the window at the huge city or the huge sceneries before getting off into the bustling city again. And working throughout the day was always easy to come home and relax on the train again. So even with a commute of nowadays in Dunedin being much shorter, that's one thing I think about fondly compared to something that might others might think, oh, that would be quite a long time to wait to get to work.
And slowness is something that you've experienced growing up in your island.
Yeah.
What's it like in terms of the pace in Japan, especially where you were in Tokyo?
Oh, definitely a lot faster in many ways. But I'm lucky to have lived in a prefecture that was a bit slower. So when I did commute and work every day, it was something that I couldn't escape. It was this fast-paced businessmen, businesswomen always being shoved into the train, literally by other people pushing them into a train car because there was hardly any room. And then I'm lucky to be a little bit taller, almost 190 centimeters, where I was a little bit taller than the crowd around me. So I kind of had a bit of air to breathe above everyone else. But once we got home, we would kind of settle down, go on hikes. There's a bunch of different shrines you could go to, like Mount Mitake is in Mitaka, and it's kind of sacred to dogs. It has a dog shrine on it, and we would take our dog Mochi up there all the time. So our dog Mochi is kind of a world traveler. She came with us from Hawaii to Japan and now all the way to New Zealand.
So how did you end up in Dunedin?
Yeah, so similar to Japan, my wife has been kind of a scholar, and she's a teacher by trade and did much of her uni work, always looking for other opportunities to learn more. And she got a full ride scholarship for a PhD here in Otago. So she went to uni and started just before COVID. Poor thing. She had to go and study and do her PhD in lockdown, quite a bit of it, but managed to work through even all those difficulties and was in a humanities department where she made a lot of fast friends that we supported, and they supported us through the difficult times. And she's also finished that, so now she still works at the university. And I used to work there too, where I built a lot of relationships with Pacific support and Pacific students and just Pacific culture in general. And my wife is a huge champion for me learning that because she's Estonian, and we also just went to Estonia because she's kind of always keen to want culture and our individual lives to clash in a good way so that we can have more meaning behind everything we do and what we believe in, our values. And so she is not Pacific, but I can say she's one of the most Pacific people who's a non-Pacific person in my life, for sure.
This is probably a question I should ask her, but because I've never met anyone from Estonia, what would you say are like differences or similarities between both your cultures?
Yeah. Funnily enough, she lived in America in Colorado, but her father's parents escaped Estonia in times of war. So they lived in an immigrant sort of – she lived in a multi-generational immigration household, which is similar to a lot of Hawaiian households where you look after your parents and you look after your grandparents, which is similar to my upbringing. And we kind of connected on that really strong – had a really strong connection after talking about how we were brought up. And there's the sort of understanding that family is really important, even if they can be far away. We're lucky enough to have them come and visit us now. During the breaks, after COVID, we had my parents come. Her parents have visited quite a few times. And just having siblings on her end too. She has two sisters and a brother. We just found a lot of similarities across how we had maybe lived far apart, but had experienced the difficulties of living in a kind of space that either isn't our own anymore, like me, Hawaii is now quite Americanized. And like her, she lived in an Estonian household, but outside, it's not really something that she could easily be seen as because she blended in quite well. It's a Caucasian sort of nation and European. And the other thing that we had in common was how her grandparents were from Saaremaa, which is an island. So it's just another island people, and we feel quite connected to the ocean. And our new home that we just purchased is right on the water. So we can always, even in the morning or going to sleep, we have our bed position looking at the ocean, and it's something that always brings us calm. And we always are lucky enough to have.
It's beautiful how parallels your lives are, even though, you know, on face value it's different. But when you really hear the story of colonization and for her family refuge from war, you know, and being together, coming together as a community and taking care of families, it's something that you have a lot in common for.
Yeah, definitely. We're really lucky to have found one another. And she just found me just in passing because she was in a totally different city. And if it didn't happen, it could have been a like one in a million, billion, trillion chance. I was really lucky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now your lives are here in Otipoti, Dunedin. You work for Pacific Trust Otago. Can you tell us about what you do?
I've been really blessed to start working at Pacific Trust Otago since February this year, where I am the youth development lead. So it still lines up with some of my passions for work and pretty much all of my passions for work. And it just might not be in the primary school sector or secondary school sector anymore. It's more along the lines of supporting youth who might no longer be studying, who might be working, who might be needing a space after they're done with school. So it's that like kind of area that they're not supported by adults or by other youth as easily. So what my job has been luckily able to do for the past few months since February was plan about how and what we can do for the community in the next couple years. A lot of youth development work is a one-off contract for just 1 year. But this particular contract from Otago Community Trust and Pacific Trust Otago has been extended to a 3-year contract. And to do it correctly, like a lot of Pacific research, we wanted to mirror that in ways of consultation and talanoa and korero with the youth. So I've been lucky enough to meet with a few hundred youth in different settings. Some are focus groups, some are big talanoa circles and group gatherings, which are centered in cultural connections, but also in kind of tuakana teina, learning from one another instead of talking down in the way that I always felt was unrealistic when it comes to my upbringing and learning in a Western kind of cultural school-based system. So I wanted to hear from the youth and what gives them strength, what gives them resilience, but also hear what stresses them out. And a lot of times that has been the same thing. Family can stress you out, but it also can bring you strength. It can be things along those lines. But it was beautiful to just have that sort of communication pathway open up so that it can have them speak about emotions and speak about things that might not ever be brought up in other settings. Because at school, you just do your work, you get it done, you get the grades, you do your NCEA. Don't talk about emotions and how difficult it can be. But I'm not saying that happens in every household. I was lucky enough to have that support when talking to my parents and saying how things can be stressful. But a lot of what I found when it comes to Pacifica youth are kind of stressed by not being able to always talk about their emotions and being told that they just should try their hardest and do the best that they can, and it better be good. So we also are now, just starting this past month in October, binding the Talanoa to be with communities and opening the doors to older generations to share what I heard and learned from the youth. Because a lot of the feedback, especially near the end where we tried to just debrief and think about what we shared, was how this was hard, difficult conversation to have in the first place, and I doubt I could ever have it with my whānau. When it comes to older generations, it's not something that's easy to talk about. And just by opening those doors to the community and to these older generations, it's hopefully allowing them to see that this is really important, and conversations about stress and what makes them strong can help them avoid the things that are stressful or work through them. And the things that bring strength and resilience can be more leaned upon and have a better chance of highlighting their successes when it comes to those. Yeah.
This is so meaningful because the conversations don't sound transactional. Like, you know, tell us what you want. Because to build relationships with young people, you do need them to trust you. Mm-hmm. And building relationships take time. And I think I understand now why it is a big project that would take 3 years. Mm. So your first year has been the Talanoa, the getting to know the community, getting to know the needs of their young people. And it's so good that, you know, that's been progressing and it will be presented to the community.
Yeah, yeah. I've met with quite a few of the Kiribati community, which is a big group that I find them amazing because there's a lot of similarities with Hawaiian culture and also a lot of Samoan communities, which I want to even meet more of because there's so many here in Dunedin. But I also luckily work at Pacific Trust Otago, where there are leaders that have these connections that can bring me to these communities. And I have lined up meetings with Fijian community here, the Niuean Wontoks. I'm also meeting with the Tongan community. And saying that, I'm sure it's just a small sort of glimpse into the entire community of these smaller minorities, basically. Mm. Minorities within minorities. But at the same time, I'm lucky enough to – I'm really glad that we talked about my cultural background growing up in Hawaii. I think that's what binds me to and gives me strength to these Talanoa when I meet with them, because they can understand that even though we might not be from the same island, we have experienced similar – there's a lot of similarities between our cultures.
Exactly.
And even with the youth, I think a lot of them opened up to me when I shared how my identity is Pacifica, and it might not be something that I can always show and shine brightly and shout to the skies or for them to easily see, because I have a look about myself that you can't really tell what in particular nation I'm from or what background I have. So when I tell them I'm Hawaiian, 98-99% of the time they say, wow, I couldn't guess. And it's because I have different grandparents from other places, and my previous ancestry verification and ancestry testing has shown that it's pretty much a long 2-page report.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But when I tell them how my identity is strongly tied to my Pacifica background, it gives them some sort of confirmation and calm and trust, knowing that we have something in common to open up to this. Luckily, it's also Pacific Trust Otago has been around for if not 20 years now, nearly 20 years. So they have quite a standing in the community. So it's not only myself. I can't thank the platform enough that I've been given and where I stand for this particular project.
Something I do want to mention as well is how diverse the Pacifica community is, and it will definitely take a lot to understand the different needs of a community, but also being aware that it does not represent that whole community because people have different layers to them.
Oh, yeah.
How are you going around with that role? Because that is huge. That is a lot of work.
That's a really good question, and I think it goes back to what I was just saying about the platform that I have is based at Pacific Trust Otago, which includes amazing leaders from these different Pacific nations. And they are amazing when they come along, help translate my presentations or touch base with anybody who might be confused about what the purpose might be behind what I'm doing in this project. The other methods that we use for connecting, even though there are a lot of differences in these communities, is being able to share how I've worked in a Pacifica-grounded space, whether it be at the university, whether it be at Pacific Trust Otago. It's always been around supporting Pacifica youth because my previous role as a tutor, I would always look after my Pacifica students the best I could, not trying to say I have favoritism.
Well, it's your job.
yeah. And I just have a connection with them. And luckily, my other job just before tutoring was supporting Pacifica students who wanted to get into health professional programs at the university. So those high achievers that want to be doctors and dentists and physios, and they need support. So I would put in place a lot of tutorials for them, extra support academically as much as I could. Yeah, stuff like that.
Mm. And yeah, I just think that the rangatahi are just lucky to have you in this space. So talking about the youth development project, this is in its first year. Tell us more about what's coming up and how we can support you in that role.
Oh, amazing. So the first year is nearly coming to an end, and we have had such an amazing series of talanoa, which are, like I said, ongoing now with communities. At first, it was with youth, which included university, student associations, the Polytech students, and then we went into some churches where there's youth groups there, high schools. So I visited King's, Queen's, Trinity, Kaikorea Valley College, and who knows, I wanted to meet with more in the future as much as I can, so that after meeting with communities, we can put an action plan in place where we have platforms that were asked for PTO to construct by the youth themselves. So it wasn't us just trying to guess, maybe they would want this or maybe they would want that. It's lucky to finish each talanoa with excitement in their in the room, because we say, now that we talked about what's stressful and what makes you feel strengthened, what activities or what can PTO do in order for you to feel more successful in terms of your well-being, in terms of your leadership, your wairua, but also resilience and what can make you bounce back stronger. Speak a little bit towards some of the things that were planned in terms of what the youth had asked for, some activities off the top of my head that were already underway in thinking, oh, this could be good because it's something we can manage. But they had personally asked for across the high schools and the tertiary setting were more talanoa with the older generations and talking about the things that are difficult to open up about, which we briefly spoke upon a little bit on. We are a health organization primarily providing nursing services, providing physio, dietitian work. And here and there, I'm the first, and there hasn't been any sort of youth development project in Pacific Trust Otago before this. So there is kind of a blank slate for what can be brought about for this action plan.
But I guess it is around well-being.
And you can't have that. You can't have well-being without resilient youth. And you can't. So they're all kind of interconnected. We use a model for all the work that we do within this project called the Fa'afale Tui model, which is Samoan for weaving together. And we're weaving together the houses of not only the youth, but the different communities and even the wider kind of macro system of working in politics and government and schools and ministries and making sure that if we can reach any sort of pocket, their voices can be heard. So the rangatahi are basically the ones that we want to make more sustainable and have better outcomes in terms of not only whether they go to work, whether they go to study, whether they're just in between doing that. We have services like mental well-being, so we can connect them with that. So please check our website at Pacific Trust Otago, a little plug. But there's also a tupu navigator for if you can't find work, we can help you with your CV. We can help youth with their interview skills, anything in between. So there's kind of a holistic, collectivistic approach to what we're doing. It's not only me, and I can't thank my team enough at Pacific Trust Otago for all the work that we do with this project. And I've never felt like my project's been a second thought. They always are like on board with wanting to work collectively. So it's been really lucky for that as well when it comes to this project.
And I really love that the rangatahi are wanting to have that talanoa with the elders, and that's something specifically they've asked for. Why do you think that is?
When it came to some of the talanoa in particular, it wasn't until the very end where multiple times, I know I haven't had many, I've had at least 10 now, but when it was primarily youth, I was approached and kind of had a one-to-one conversation with, maybe it was a one-to-two, one-to-three conversation with some of the youth. And they say, oh, these are things that I wish I could really talk about at home. But there's barriers up that make it difficult for me to not sound as though I'm complaining or I'm talking back or I'm being disrespectful, because a lot of these discussions on emotion can sometimes be shut down, not because of a purposeful or malicious parent, nothing like that. It's maybe just the culture that can sometimes be intertwined with wanting to keep your head down, be strong, and succeed. And it's not every family that might feel that way, but there is definitely a voice needed from those families that can and do use those skills for the ones that might not be experiencing or have that opportunity. There were times in my upbringing where I can relate to that as well, where I didn't always have the chance to share my emotions, and I didn't realize how important that was until I wouldn't say adulthood. I still consider myself youth at heart. But yeah. When I finally started to say, I feel, and whatever that's followed up with, it's like a weight off your shoulders. And that's not always something that can be said or shared in every Pacifica household, or they have difficulties with it in some way, shape, or form. So this is an opportunity that we hope we can maybe open those doors. And another reason why we thought it was helpful is when it comes to resilience, how else are we going to know how to bounce back and be strong in the face of difficulty without at first acknowledging how you feel when you are feeling the difficulties?
It's also about normalizing all these conversations.
Exactly. No, that's perfectly said, because normalizing isn't even the first step for a lot of these families. Even in my home, growing up with my mom and dad, luckily their parenting style was very authoritative and helpful with wanting to hear me. But I had step parents that were maybe a bit more authoritarian, where they say, you do what I tell you, and that's the end of story, which I think a lot of Pacific youth can relate to, and the ones I met with anyway, because it was immediately like, yep, I am told to do my homework and do my sport and keep my head down, which brings support, but it doesn't give the chance for them to share how they're feeling.
Mm.
And I'm kind of a researcher here and there. When I do find some interesting work on youth, I try to keep up to date, and I find quite depressing pieces like parents don't talk to their youth more than, if you're lucky, like an hour a week personally to discuss how they feel or any other sort of conversation. So what is that going to mean for them later on when they're probably growing up and needing to communicate with others, whether it be peers or their partners or any sort of people in their lives, if they haven't had that sort of practice other than with peers, when there's going to be others that might be an older generation and there's maybe even much younger and they didn't have much communication skills in that area.
Mm.
So that's another kind of pillar that we hope to improve upon. So we have four pillars in our evaluation method, which are making them more connected, more resilient, thriving, and contributing, because they kind of all go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other.
Mm. And that's beautiful. And I love that this project is underway, going into its second year.
Mm.
Where can people find out more information about your work and also how we can support you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are always posting on our Facebook page for Pacific Trust Otago. And my information is on the Pacific Trust Otago website. And feel free to – I've been getting emails just here and there about really helpful organizations that want to just be connecting and sharing opportunities that they have in place. But I also think there's been an amazing outreach already being done within our organization. For example, it was just 2 weeks ago we had a sports day where a lot of the rangatahi were just given notice about a couple weeks ahead of time to sign up and have a tournament for volleyball, netball. And there was over 200 strong that just showed up at Educate Center and all had an amazing time during the school holidays. And that was on a Thursday and Friday, which most people probably are busy on those days, but they made the time and could come. And those are other things that we're definitely going to be promoting and setting up, because that's part of being resilient. That's part of thriving, being able to contribute to community sort of events. And that is one of the things that they ask for, more mentoring opportunities, more sports events, academic support. But last but not least, I can't go any further without thanking our youth council, which we have. Mm. And they also are thinking about ways that they can contribute to other, whether it be Pacific or non-Pacifica, youth councils around the community, because they would love to kind of be able to give back and share their experiences within their governing experience. So just another area that we were thinking about.
And I think there's so much more that we will cover in the next time we have a chat, because I do want to keep up to date on the progress of the youth development project at PTO as well. See you again, Garrett. Thank you so much for being
here. Cheers. Thank you, Arina.
Thanks for listening to Connecting Cultures Features on RFM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.